Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Chichen Itza was a city built by the Maya of Mesoamerica in what is today Mexico, and it is best known, of course, for its famous step pyramids. You'd probably recognize pictures of these things. They've got their steep staircases running down each side. It was one of the biggest Maya cities ever built. It dates all the way back to the mid-8th century CE and is found on the Yucatan Peninsula. If you think of Mexico as sort of being a lopsided crescent, it's at the crescent's lower tip. And today, the city is uninhabited, but I don't know how fair it would be to call it a ruin, as most of the structures seem to be in incredible condition, and thousands of tourists flock there every year. It's one of the most popular tourist destinations in all of Mexico. If you search for anything tourism-related when it comes to Mexico, and you'll see pictures of two things. One, beautiful beaches, and number two, the Temple of Kukulcan, or El Castillo, the most famous of all the buildings in Chichen Itza, that iconic step pyramid. So let's get underway here. Let's talk about this famous monument, the old Maya city of Chichen Itza. Let's talk about why and how it was built, talk about its rise and its fall, and we'll also talk about its place today in the 21st century. And the story of Chichen Itza begins, as I mentioned, in the mid-8th century, although the region was already inhabited before the city proper was built, so we can go back a little bit further. We don't know exactly when people settled this area, but we can have a very good guess as to why they did. Because Chichen Itza is built on a landform known as karst, that's K-A-R-S-T, which is created by water eroding limestone, often below ground. Some karstic regions have spectacular rock formations above ground, but many karstic areas look pretty normal and boring on the surface, flat ground ranging from, you know, green fields to rocky, barren ground. But if you dig a little deeper, very literally, you will find karst to be full of enormous cave systems below the surface, often with underground lakes and rivers. Now, I have to be honest, before making this episode, I didn't even realize that an underground river was a real thing. I thought this was something out of, I don't know, fantasy and fiction, something, you know, almost magical. But no, they exist. Underground rivers are a real thing, and the plentiful underground water supplies that they bring is one of the reasons that Chichen Itza ultimately came to be. Because the people who lived there before the city was actually founded properly were known as the Itza, one of the Maya peoples who at the time lived on the Yucatan Peninsula. And the word Itza means water sorcerers or enchanted water. So actually, maybe I wasn't that far off thinking that an underground river is something you'd associate with wizards and spells and everything. Anyway, the Itza, they lived in this area. They had ample access to water through the use of cenotes or sinkholes that exposed these underground water sources that ran beneath the surface. And without these cenotes and the water that they gave to the region, this area would make for very, very hard living. It's pretty arid along this part of the Yucatan Peninsula, but with large cenotes nearby, this spot ended up being the perfect place for a mighty city. And there are two distinct chapters in the history of Chichen Itza's actual construction. The first beginning, as I mentioned, the mid-8th century, around 750 CE. And while we don't have the clearest picture of what this initial period of growth and development looked like, it seems that Chichen Itza very quickly emerged as a regional power as its population expanded and built larger and grander buildings. And this, in no small part, was due to easy and plentiful access to water in an otherwise somewhat arid region of Mexico. Not necessarily arid, but maybe water was a little scarcer than you'd like when attempting to build, you know, a great big city. And with access to water, Chichen Itza became a regional trading hub. And with trade came wealth, and with wealth came growth. Chichen Itza expanded as ruling courts and temples and housing and even observatories shot up, built in what is known as the Puuc style. And all the while, its population and power, of course, only grew and grew, as the city did. And these construction efforts did take some doing. I will say this, the area around Chichen Itza is quite heavily forested. The terrain under the forest is rugged and rough, and so its people first had to clear the land of trees and then flatten the ground out before quarrying and dragging stone into place to build these buildings. In any case, after all this hard yakka, within a century or so, Chichen Itza was more or less a regional capital. It traded by both land and by sea. It had a port city that it controlled on the coast, 100 kilometers to the north. And the people of Chichen Itza, they traded water and salt and cacao, and in return, they received valuable materials like gold and obsidian, which flowed through the city and made its population more wealthy and more prosperous than ever. Its buildings became more grand and more opulent than ever. However, there was another factor in the rise of Chichen Itza as a regional power. It wasn't just for economic reasons, but also political reasons that saw the city flourish. The Maya civilization never saw the rise of one large single central authority, unlike some other nearby civilizations such as the Aztecs. We talk about the Aztec Empire. There never really was a Maya Empire. Instead, the Maya were divided up into distinct city-states, often with their own languages, their own cultures, while still falling under the broad category of the Maya. And these city-states, like Chichen Itza, like Palenque, history's longest reigns, to episode 280, get across it, they had fortunes that waxed and waned over the years. And one of the reasons that Chichen Itza flourished is because some neighboring city-states didn't, really, is the long and the short of it. For instance, the neighboring city of Coba, it suffered invasion and conquest. It lost much of its territory, and this caused people to leave and seek their fortunes elsewhere. And why not go to this central trading hub where there's so much wealth on offer? So they headed to Chichen Itza. Consequently, another neighboring city, Yachuna, which had very close links with Coba, it also went into decline along with its ally. And once again, Chichen Itza was there to fill the void. In fact, Chichen Itza very likely contributed to the downfall of cities like these. As a wealthy and prosperous and very powerful city-state, it swooped in to capitalize on its neighbor's bad luck. However, Chichen Itza may have then fallen victim to this process itself as we enter now into the second chapter of the city's development. I talked about how it was something of a regional capital. I talked about how it was a very, very wealthy city. And while that didn't necessarily change in what was about to come along in the next chapter of Chichen Itza's history, the city, all the same, underwent quite a drastic shift in its culture and in the nature of the people that lived there. All throughout the 10th century, Chichen Itza remained a regional powerhouse. Again, the de facto capital, I think it's fair to say. But then, into the 11th century, it underwent a sudden and somewhat mysterious change. Once again, we don't have very full records of what happened, and so a lot of what we're going to talk about now is educated guesswork. But one thing I can tell you with certainty is that, from the 11th century onwards, Chichen Itza's architecture, the buildings that were built, aren't in the traditional Puuc style associated with the region. Instead, they are built in the Toltec style. The Toltec people were another Mesoamerican civilization, the cultural forerunners to the Aztecs. The Aztecs would come along in later centuries. And the question here is, why was there this cultural takeover by the Toltec? But much more importantly, how did this cultural takeover actually happen? And the reason the how part of the question is so interesting is because the Toltec people were centered in their capital city of Tula, which is over 1,000 kilometers away from Chichen Itza. How did Toltec architecture end up not just present but dominant in a city over 1,000 kilometers away? Well, I don't have a definitive answer to offer you here. There are competing theories, and none have ever really been conclusively proven or disproven. And even today, archaeologists and historians are working to untangle this mystery and attempt to find any evidence whatsoever that can put this question to bed. There's one theory that suggests that this cultural takeover was the result of exchange through trade links between the two powerful cities, between Chichen Itza and Tula. And this is certainly possible. We've seen this in other parts of the world, but it would take quite a lot of cultural exchange to get to the point that your cultural output is entirely eclipsed by someone else's culture. Certainly there can be a level of amalgamation or adaptation of certain elements of another culture, but we're looking at a period of cultural output where the new culture more or less completely eclipsed the old culture. And that's not something that generally happens through cultural exchange. So I'm not sure about that theory. It's one put forward by people who know a lot more about this than I do. So I'm not going to completely say that it's nonsense or anything like that. But it doesn't seem to be all that convincing from first blush. Certainly less convincing than another theory that suggests that the Toltec people just expanded their territory and influence so far that they were able to subjugate Chichen Itza. The Toltec were very powerful at their peak. They're one of the mightiest and most prominent Mesoamerican civilizations in history. And so it is possible that their realm expanded to include Chichen Itza and that they brought this powerful city-state to heel either politically, economically, or indeed militarily. The city could have been invaded and conquered by the Toltec based all the way over in Tula. Alternatively, Chichen Itza could have been invaded and conquered by Toltec who weren't actually part of the Toltec people from Tula. Now, this might sound confusing, but bear with me here, because this third theory proposes, right, that after a period of internal strife or even civil war in the Toltec heartlands, there may have been a mass expulsion of the defeated faction. These Toltec people, having lost the civil war, if there was one, may have then migrated all the way to Chichen Itza, having heard of its wealth and prosperity, and of course still armed for war in the wake of this internal strife, just marched on the city and took it over. Again, there's no definitive proof one way or the other, but whatever the cause, from the 11th century onwards, Chichen Itza was dominated by Toltec culture. And the most obvious consequence of this Toltec cultural dominance is still around today. The great buildings constructed in the Toltec style, and most famously of all, of course, the step pyramid known as El Castillo, or the Temple of Kukulcan. This is the pyramid that you'll see pictures of when looking up anything about Chichen Itza. So much so that, honestly, you'd be forgiven for thinking that it was Chichen Itza, not the city as a whole, just this single one pyramid. It's 30 metres high, 55 metres square, and it is very cleverly constructed with all sorts of, how are we going to put this, hidden features, I guess? Things like if you clap your hands near the side of the temple, it makes this pinging noise that is said to mimic the local Quetzal bird, right? You can go on YouTube and find videos of tourists doing this. It's incredible. It's a real thing. And the sound that it makes is unbelievable, because you can go on YouTube and find videos, very charming videos, of these tour guides, right, taking tour groups, these tourists around El Castillo and demonstrating this phenomenon to them. The whole group will stand there and they clap their hands, and the noise that comes back is, it's really amazing. It is not what you'd expect at all. So I do recommend going and having a listen to or a watch of these videos, because again, you'll be taken aback by this weird pinging noise that the temple makes when you clap at it. Also, it's not the only amazing thing about the temple. The temple also has exactly 365 steps. Now, this is not an accident, because the temple has four flights of stairs, one on each of the faces of the pyramid. And to make these staircases add up to 365, three of the flights have 91 steps, but one has 92. So it's very obvious here that there is one step in the temple per day of the year. So there was obviously a level of significance to that. Obviously a level of deliberate design went into to that aspect of this temple. It wasn't an accident, surely, given that there's one extra step on one of the flights of stairs. But perhaps most incredible of all is the fact that around the equinoxes, so twice a year, right, the sun falls on the temple in such a way that it casts a shadow onto itself, right, that makes it look like a snake is crawling along the stairs. It's very difficult to describe this to you just by using words. So again, go online and have a look at these pictures of the way that the temple creates this almost optical illusion of a snake crawling down the stairs with a head at the bottom where the snake's head should be. It really is something else. There are all these very, very intricate and very cleverly designed aspects of the temple that make it the most famous building in Chichen Itza. But it's certainly not the only building there. There's the Temple of the Warriors, another pyramid. There's the Caracol, an astronomical observatory. And there's also the Great Ball Court. The Great Ball Court really is great. It's absolutely huge. It's almost 170 meters long. It's so big that it's hard to imagine it actually being used for the ball game that the Maya used to play. The goals, which are rings, kind of like basketball rings, except that they're perpendicular to the ground rather than parallel. The rings are 8 meters above the ground. So for reference, a basketball ring is just over 3 meters above the ground. So you'd have to have a hell of a jump to dunk on the Great Ball Court. Also, along the walls of the Great Ball Court are depictions of a losing team being decapitated by the winning team, which is pretty full on. We don't see that all that often in professional sports these days. Imagine that. Imagine LeBron ripping off someone's head after a game. Bloody hell. Anyway, under the influence of the Toltec culture, Chichen Itza continued to expand and develop, and at its peak, between 35,000 to as many as 50,000 people called Chichen Itza home. It really was a huge city, but as with all the other Maya city-states, it didn't last forever. Into the 12th and the 13th centuries, Chichen Itza itself began to decline, just as some of its neighbors had done hundreds of years ago, and this time it was another city, Mayapan, that eclipsed it. Chichen Itza was initially politically aligned with Mayapan, along with some other cities. It had been the dominant partner in this political relationship, but in time, Mayapan became powerful enough to start to call the shots and eventually subjugated Chichen Itza, either politically or militarily, we're not sure. Whatever the case, by the 13th century, Chichen Itza was under the thumb of Mayapan, and its apex as a regional power was well and truly behind it. As time went on, people slowly but steadily left Chichen Itza behind to move elsewhere, to the point that the city became more or less abandoned. No new buildings or monuments were constructed from the 13th century onwards, and by the 15th century, the city had well and truly fallen into decline. By the time the Spanish arrived in the 16th century, Chichen Itza was uninhabited, although it was still a site that the Maya visited or made pilgrimages to. The Spanish, on the other hand, they used the abandoned cleared land to graze their livestock until the forests closed back in on the abandoned city as the decades turned to centuries. And in what is becoming a very common theme with our monuments so far, the city was reclaimed by nature. And while not completely forgotten about, it was largely forsaken by the people who had used to live there. But then, in the 19th century, a renewed archaeological interest in pre-Columbian civilizations resulted in Chichen Itza being investigated by explorers and researchers of the time. In the mid to late 1800s, more and more people visited the lost city, which was, as I mentioned, completely overtaken by the surrounding forests. Again, go online, have a look at some of the pictures from the place. Today, Chichen Itza has been reclaimed from nature, but there are photos from the 19th century that show just how completely overgrown the city had become. El Castillo, for instance, this famous pyramid, is almost completely covered with vegetation, while other buildings have trees not just growing all around them, but also growing inside them as well. But into the 20th century, the Mexican government authorized American researchers to clear the forests that had overtaken Chichen Itza and restore many of its buildings. And while there was, of course, a bit of good old-fashioned looting of artifacts and treasures, those who worked on restoring Chichen Itza did, broadly speaking, a pretty bloody good job. The city itself is, considering its age and its reclamation by nature, in very, very good condition indeed. Some buildings are in better nick than others, but for the most part, Chichen Itza still really does give you a sense of the grandeur and the opulence it had at its peak. Thousands and thousands of people visit Chichen Itza every single day. And so conservationists still, of course, work to maintain and protect the site. But I will say, they are doing a bloody good job. Obviously, the people of Chichen Itza built their buildings to last, so that certainly helps. But it's very good that today, the custodianship of this magnificent Maya city is being taken so seriously.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.